Okay, so now that Dave has basically told you top is just a background, I'm actually going to show you what we've been doing with our recent data. Now that we've had data for about 2 years at Tevatron. So I'll do a little bit of what the status is right now. Things have changed a lot in the last year about what we expect as far as total integrated luminosity and how the things are working. Most of the things that I'm going to show you, we have about 5 new cross-section measurements, and there is this new, brand new, hot off the press, just 10 minutes ago, single top number I will show, and the mass. And I'm going to actually leave out the W helicity, which Dave partly mentioned, just because the error is so large, it's basically a non-measurement. Now, Dave spent a lot of time telling you about the motivation from the theorist side, but this is why, you know, the experimentalists want to do the top. So I just want to give you a brief reminder, Peter. This is what it's going to look like when you get there. So they'll be white, and Chicago's 30 miles away, just so you know, right? So you're in the middle of nowhere. So going from run one to run two, one of the major things is we've added a new ring. So we have a new main injector which replaced our standard magnets that we used to have before in this ring. What that's done for us is, one, we've gone from a new center of mass energy of 1.8 up to 1.96, which increases the top cross-section by 30%. We've also changed the number of bunches. We used to have 6 proton bunches colliding with 6 antiproton bunches. We've now upped that to 36 on 36. There had been originally plans to do 132 or 96 on 96, which would have made the timing between benches 132 nanoseconds. We have scrapped that. That is no longer in the cards. What that means for us is that when we do get to these higher luminosities with the 36 on 36, we have a lot more of underlying events. We expect about 5 additional collisions per event. I want to toot our horn a little bit. So we won the lab runs on fiscal years that start at the end of October, beginning of November. So I'm going to show things for 04, which start basically November 1st of 03. We had a shutdown that was over September and November and came back. And as always happens when we come back, we usually are not running as well as we were before. But in 03, we were basically, our peak luminosity was around 40. That was the best we were doing. Why we shut down for 10 weeks was to go in, one, to work on the recycler, and I'll come to that in a minute, and two was to go in and actually roll all of our magnets and realign our magnets. When we did that, that actually has caused our ability to have much better peak luminosities increase significantly. So we've had two records, one yesterday morning at 4 a.m. and one on Tuesday. So we're now up at 58 U30. We expect to get up to 75 U30 by the end of 04. So we actually, for a change, are above our design goals for once in the last 2 years. And what that means for integrated luminosity is that as of today, we have now gone over our expected goals for design luminosity. The base for this year was supposed to be 230. We are out currently taking about 8 inverse picobarns a week. So hopefully we'll be closer to what we have as a stretch goal, closer to 300 inverse picobarns just for this year alone. So when you put it on with what we've got from the previous 2 years, by the end of 04, we should have 500 or half a femtobarn. So we did do a lot of this work on the recycler, and we did this new rolling of the magnets to improve the alignment. We are also, last week, with the recycler, we've actually successfully done a shot from the recycler. So that is a new milestone. We've had problems. The vacuum was not good enough before on the recycler after they originally built it to be able to use it. And that was one of the reasons we've actually scaled back what our long-term integrated luminosity goals are. So we are doing greater than 8 a week. We are supposed to run up until the end of August, when we're going to take a 13-week shutdown. And when we're doing that, what we're going to do is try to put an electron cooling into the recycler. If the electron cooling works, we then expect to get 8.5 femtobarns by 2009. So we used to say 15, right? And then in about October of last year, when we started talking about, got kind of pessimistic, we were saying this was going to be 4. So now, conservatively, we expect we'll be somewhere between 4.4 by the time, a little bit after the LHC comes on, and 8.5, right? So things are looking a little better. I don't want you to read this slide. All I wanted to say about the CDF detector, and you're having a talk next week from D0, is that we also made extensive upgrades. to the detector. One of the main things we did is we extended our tracking, particularly for looking for displaced vertices from bees, which helps a lot in the top measurements. So we've extended this range out to an eta of 2. We've also added increased muon coverage and increased calorimetry. So in general, we made the whole thing just more robust. And I don't think many of you need to be reminded, but top quark, it turns out one of the differences between LHC and the Tevatron, right, is that for us, we are doing QQ-bar annihilation instead of glue-glue. And there is a change from going from 1.8 to 1.96. Now it's only about 85% of the time. It's been 90% of the time. But this makes certain measurements easier for us to do at the Tevatron, even though we're not going to have as many events as they are going to have at the LHC. So one of the things that, this is sort of a schematic of the things, kind of things we expect to be able to do with the top quark mass measurement. And so actually today I'm going to focus on the cross sections and the top mass. But in 1.1 we've actually done all of these. And Dave talked about several of these. We have looked for top color Z prime. We have looked for rare branching decays, that kind of thing. Well, to do all that again, we have looked for VTB indirectly through sort of a W helicity measurement. And this time in run 2, we expect to be actually to extend a lot of the things just because the statistics will be so much higher. And as Dave also mentioned, you all know it doesn't hadronize. And this is going to come back later because this helps us with our B tagging and makes us able to do a lot of these analyses with a much better precision than we would have if that wasn't true. There are going to be 3 signatures that we typically talk about experimentally. So, and this is characterized by how the W decays when the top goes to WB. So I will talk about ones that are the dileptons, where both of the Ws from the top and the anti-top go to a lepton-neutrino pair. We also have the lepton plus jets, where one W is a lepton-neutrino, the other goes as QQ bar. And there is also the all-hadronic mode, which actually is the largest branching ratio, but it's also the hardest to do because it has the largest background. And we have no new results in the all-hadronics. There's only run 1 results there. We have only concentrated on dilepton, which has a very small branching fraction, but it has a very also small background, so we can have good precision out of that. And then in lepton plus jets, we can use our B tagging here to buy us a lot. So typically how you do a cross-section experimentally is you look and see how many observed events you had, you subtract out how much background you think you have, you divide it by your acceptance to see this type of event in your detector, multiplied by the total integrated luminosity. I will show you we have, from the last 2 years, we have 2 measurements in the dilepton cross-section, and we've now extended our lepton plus jets. There's 4 of them. I don't want to spend a lot of time on these. But the 2 light dileptons, there's one that is basically the repeat of what we did in run 1. So we actually go and we look for 2 leptons. So it has to be, we have to identify it in our detector as it is definitely an electron or muon. We have added a new one, which is now where we positively identify one of the leptons, but then we let the other lepton is associated as just an isolated track. It does not have to match to a muon stub, for example. This increases our acceptance. We can use our new extended forward tracking, so we have more events in this case. Now they both do the same thing. They look for 2 jets coming from the bees, and they look for 1 lepton, and in the other, in the one case, a second lepton, the other one just a track. Yeah.
So you can supposedly look at cows easily. Well,
What do you mean easily? Well, we.
To some degree. Do you treat cows as a separate sample, or does it?
Yes, actually, I don't have that result here because it's. I think we have one, it's up for blessing, but we do have a cross section that's coming in the E-tau and U-tau. And then there is actually a group that does hadronic tau decays. There's a fight kind of going on, actually. We have a whole tau group because tau is important for Susie in various exotic searches, right? So there's. So I don't have the tau cross section here. So what we did in run 1 was we looked for these 2 leptons and 2 jets coming from the bees. We do that again out of. Actually, that's what's on here. This is an older number, so we see 10 events out of 126 picobarns. So this is the amount of data we had up until the lepton-photon conference in August of 2003. And we expect, out of 10 events, we expect 3 of them to be background. So that gives us a cross-section of 7.6, which is...
Do you need 2 jets, but do you need any B tags on them for this?
We don't, no. We actually have gone and looked to see how many events are, and we have five of those events out of those 10 are tagged with B.
And that's consistent with your efficiency. I mean,
yes.
It's probably consistent with a lot.
But yeah. It's actually exactly what we would expect based on our current B tagging efficiency. The new one that we've done is where we loosen up the criteria for our second left Tom and just look for an isolated track. When we do that, we go from 10 candidates, we gain some, but also they have a brand new result that they blessed last week. So in the next week or two, we're expecting to have lots of new results coming out for the winter conferences. And this two inverse Pico Barnes is up all the data we took up till the September shutdown, which is twice the amount of data we had in 1-1. Okay, so, and if you look at the statistical errors and things, they are on track of what you would assume in the increase in luminosity for the cross section. So when you do this one, we end up with 6.9, and then the statistical error is around 2.5 to 3. Where we're getting bitten right now, and I'll talk about this a little bit more, is our systematics. We have not had the time yet to go and do all the detailed systematics, so these are still quite big and bigger than what we had in run one. In the Lepton Plus Jets channel, we have 4 results. One is a brand new one. There are 3 ones that use this B tagging. So we have 2 that used what we call the displaced vertex tag back in run one, or the SVX tag. All right, and there's a copy. We've always done, and the first thing we did was a copy of what we did in run one. Right, that was the easiest thing to do. Now we're adding things on. So now, besides doing what we did in run one, we have taken the events which are B tagged and said, let's look at some of the kinematic variables and do a fit to that to get the cross section. Just last week, we now have included what we call our soft lepton tag. So the B does a cascade decay to a C, and they have get a soft lepton coming out in the same area as the jet and the jet cone. And we use this in run one. It doesn't have nearly the same power as the displaced vertex. That's why D0 went back in and put in a silicon. They only had this mode last time. So we do have a new result of that. We don't have a very good understanding of the backgrounds and things there yet. So this we will eventually do for both electrons and muons, but we've only done it for muons right now. And then there's a brand new one, which is a new method, which actually want to increase the statistics. So we just don't use the B tagging, and we do a fit to kinematic variables. So in the Lepton Plus Jets channel, now what I'm looking for, instead of 2 jets, 2 leptons, I'm looking for 2 jets coming from the Bs. Now one of my Ws decays hadronically, so I have 2 more jets. So I'm looking for something with 4 jets and a lepton and missing energy coming from the neutrino. And what we do in a lot of these cases is we require that there only be 3 or more jets to increase the number of events we have. Yeah, so all the results that I'm showing right now, we are still using the old cone clustering algorithm we used in one run with a smaller cone for the fact that it's top and they're more collimated. We are doing studies for using the midpoint algorithm and a KT, but in fact that's one of the things Joey and I am working on. But there is no results, and that's what I partly mean. We've been pushed so much in this last year just to show numbers of any kind that everything we've done is a repeat of run one because we had the code and we knew how to do it. So we are now just starting to do a lot of the cross-checks, new analysis techniques, and then trying to see if we can do something better. I mean, we know that everybody yells at us that that's not the right way to do this.
Do you actually go back and reprocess all the existing data with new algorithms?
It's not that hard. So we have the raw data processed through the detector. The calorimetry part doesn't take very long, and you can rerun it yourself. So in fact, what we do afterwards is we go and take the top events and we rerun them with both a KT algorithm and the midpoint, and then you go and you check what happens to your number of jet distributions and those kind of things.
Well, I was thinking in terms of the ISL, the extra silicons, and 3D algorithms for the silicon, things like this. Because that should increase your samples.
Right. So that's one thing I'll get to is that we have not. One of the big changes that's coming the next month is we have not included forward tracking in the ISO and layer 0.0, partly because it has not been in a robust form in our code, our reconstruction code. So starting in about 2 weeks, we're going to reprocess all data from the beginning of run 2 up until now with the new code, which will include all that. So, but it is, it's, you know, millions and millions of events. It takes 2 months. So when we decide we have to want to reprocess, we decide and then schedule it out. And we basically decided that for the last 200 inverse pico barns, we will redo it, but now after this, from now on out, you probably won't. We'll do smaller chunks, or you won't be able to do a grand mall, all of them. Kind of reprocess. Before I get into the bee tagging, I just want to remind you that the displaced vertex is how our best way of increasing our precision. So all we're doing is, because the bee has a long lifetime, it actually travels away from the primary vertex, so we can actually measure this distance with our precision tracking. And so we look for a significance where the distance between the primary vertex and the secondary one divided by the error on where we know the secondary one is greater than 3. And we say, okay, it moves far enough, we believe it's a bee. So when we do the run one, just do what we did in run one, we see 35. Now again, this is an older result, so it's only an out of 100, and it will be updated with 200 inverse pico barns. And we get a cross section which is 4.5, which is, if you'll notice, it's kind of low, right? So the other numbers I showed you were almost 7, and two that are around 7. And so this one is a little bit of a surprise. Again, we don't quite have all of the bee tagging capabilities yet. There's a lot of work going into that. This would be significantly improved in our next round. These are the uncertainties that make up the systematic errors. Okay, so that's our biggest uncertainty is coming just how well do we understand our background. Now the plot over here is showing you our signal region is in a number of 3 jets or more, so where we expect to see top is here. When you look over in the 1 jet and 2 jet bin, then there is a small amount of top, but our data is lying where we would expect for a combination of background plus a little bit of top.
So what is your main limitation on the beta efficiency?
Well, right now we're at 55%, and our TDR that we wrote years ago said we would be up to 65. The reason we're not up to 65 yet is we haven't included the ISL, which is the outer layers which get us out to an eta of 2. So right now we're only doing tracking of bees at eta of 1. So we will increase that by doing the forward acceptance. We also have the capability of doing 3D tracking. So we have the R, phi, and the Z. We don't do that right now. We don't have that in the code, and we don't use our layer 0, 0, which is one that sits right on the beam pipe. So when we add all of those things in and we optimize, we should be at least at 65. So this is just a crude reenactment of what we did in run one. That's how we get to 55.
How do you measure the beam pipe efficiency? How do you
That's actually a complicated, that's fairly complicated. So I don't know if you want to, we can take that offline. We use a combination of Monte Carlo and data, and we do a mistag matrix and things like that. But that's also why this has got a pretty big uncertainty. We haven't had time to go do all the same type of studies we did in run one.
As the samples go up, you can probably do single tag, double tag events.
That's the plan.
Well, the statistics to do that.
Right. Eventually, we want to do things in the Z to BB bar sample and various things that you can actually, and then the ratio of single to double tags is another hold, but we just don't have enough data yet. But that is the eventual plan. So there was an idea which we never did in run one, was make use not only of just not doing just a counting experiment, but actually looking at the kinematic shapes. So we have done one new result where we've taken the same B-tagged events I just showed in the standard 1-1 analysis, and we've added in kinematic information. So these are just a sample of the kinds of plots you could make. So up here is just the sum of the 3 highest ET jets, so the sum of their PT. This is the PT of the leading jet, so the highest ET jet, and so on. And what you're looking for is that the background, which is just W to generic BB bar, is in the red, and what we would expect from TT bar is in the black. So you can now do a fit to templates which include background plus some top and see what your data, what it fits better to. And so when we do that, we get a distribution which we've found out so far the only thing we've looked at is using the highest ET jet and plotting its ET. And so the histogram is the data. The blue is what you would expect from background. The red is the shape you expect from TT bar. And the sum has been normalized. The black is their sum compared with what we see in the data when you do the fit. you get an cross-section that's 6.9. So these are the same 35 events that I just showed you where with the secondary vertex tagging, I said we had a cross-section of 4.5. You do this analysis, you do a fit to shapes, and you get a 6.9 cross-section. Now again,
that's kind of strange because the background is low, so can that really account for the difference between the two numbers?
Well, the statistical error on both is around 2, so it's
the
like...
Are the samples not...
They are exactly the same, 35 events. But in one case, you're just doing accounting, and we're actually seeing less events than we would expect. So that's where you're getting a lower 4.5. Right? In this one, you're using the shape information, which says top should have a boosted leading jet. So you get extra information in here on those 35. Those 35 events look more top-like, is why you get a higher cross-section.
So you refit the data and conclude that more of it was signal and less background than you just...
Correct. Okay. Correct. Yeah, so that's another way to look at it. So
if I looked at it in the other sample, it would have seen a higher background with EGN 6.9.
Right.
Now this red eye is an optimal comparable. I mean, it's completely...
Yes. Yes, it does.
And it doesn't have an entire object that's leading both now.
Well, that's one of the things I've said that we haven't, in run one, right, we didn't care. Run one, we were so statistics limited that error was much bigger than what we could do systematically. So it didn't make as much of a difference. It does now for run two. But we have not had the time to go through and even understand our own detector in the last 2 years sufficiently. The largest error, well, not in the cross-section, but we'll get to that in the other ones. The biggest problem we have right now is jet systematics because we just don't understand our calorimetry yet. You know, in run one, we had 5 or 6 years to understand how the detector worked before we had to go through and make these kind of measurements, right? So all these systematics are inflated. Yes, it does. Yeah, so.
How much is it?
I'd have to go look on this one. It's probably 20%, 20 to 30%. It's big. So we do take into account the fact that we move the shapes around of the Monte Carlo. We tried different Monte Carlos, but we have not spent a lot of time optimizing that, and that is another problem. We have switched to ELPGen, so almost all of the, this one actually is using Herwig for TT-bar. A lot of the other things use Pythia instead of Herwig, and most everybody is using ELPGen, but I'm in the process of looking at MCNNLO, and some other people for various other things. And Steve Morena's been making us CKKW samples. So we're in the middle of, we've got 6 or 7 Monte Carlos that we're using to do all these different processes. So then one last thing we did for the cross-section was I was restricted to 35 events when I said there had to be a B tag in these lepton plus jet events. Let's actually get twice as much data by throwing out that B tag. So I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to fit to a kinematic variable, and we have lots of choices. So there's a group that's looked at lots of different things. HT happens to be the favorite, which is just a sum of all of the jet PTs and a lepton PT, right? And that's another variable that D0 uses a lot. So it just tells you that you expect on top there to be a buttload of energy, right? So it turns out that its sensitivity is a little bit better than some other things, but you know, the ET of the jets is basically a subset of HT, and they all kind of have the same sensitivity. This was a good way to check that we believe our numbers and we're not being biased by the B tagging. So like you said, we got these two kind of congruous measurements. The problem here is I have twice as much data, but that also means I have a lot higher background, and my purity goes to, you know, falls off because I don't have the B tag. Now, what they've been doing right now is it was simple just to pick one, so they picked HT. The idea is to ultimately do a neural network type style and combine all of the information. So when they do this, they actually split it up into two cases. They say, I want the events which are W plus 3 jets, and I want the ones that are W plus 4 or more jets. The reason you do this still has a lot of background in it. So if I restrict myself that I must have at least 4 jets, I'm much more on the top sector. And when they go and then do a fit, this is a plot of the HT and the distributions. So your backgrounds are the red and the blue with what you expect the data to look like or the top distribution to look like, and the data is the points. And when you actually then look at this and fit what fraction you is coming from top, in this case you have 50%, whereas up here you only have 12. Now we still are going to use these numbers because right now we're statistics limited in that case, so you look at this number to get the smaller systematic. This one is more pure top. And I've been skipping, I haven't shown you, just this talk would go on forever because this is five results, right, if I showed you the systematics for all of them. So they all work about the same way. The dilepton ones I was showing you originally and the first tagged lepton plus jets, those were all counting experiments. So their uncertainties are a little bit different than these last two things that I showed you, which have to do with fits, kinematic fits. But the biggest thing you'll see is that when you change your energy scale, so when you play around with your jet energies, it throws your distributions all out of whack. So we're currently anywhere between 30 and 40% of our systematic is coming from not understanding our jets and our calorimeter. Then we do take into account things like the PDFs, Q-squared choice. You asked about, in this case, they use something called a background model, but they changed which Monte Carlos they were using, the shapes, to see how it affected them. So, but in total, we're still doing systematics that are around 40% of our value. So there's a lot of work to be done here. So to get a rough idea, we've done actually, these two are what I just showed. So there's just a discrepancy. If you notice, again, you see this really low number when I say three or more, and when I increase the purity, where I have just four more jets, I go up to eight for the cross section. But this is our whole range. So there's actually shown here seven cross sections. The newest ones with the larger amount of data, which also has improved ways. We have smaller systematics coming from here. So this is a number I believe more. This one, and then actually these guys down here, but more this one. So they're with the bigger data sample. But there is quite a range. You know, the statistics and systematics are still large, much larger. The systematics are much larger than they were in run one. And the one weird thing to me, which no one quite has figured out yet, is why when we look at just straight B tags, we get these, for whatever reason, the pure samples with B tags have smaller cross sections, which we actually. Well, we thought we actually pulled this result, and this one is brand new as of 2 weeks ago, from the lepton photon because we didn't understand what was going on here. And we thought we had one of the changes we'd made was we used to just use anywhere. The beam line itself was our restriction for where the primary vertex was. And then we went to actually changing our code and calculating where the primary vertex really was by taking tracks and pointing back and saying, here's the primary vertex. And so that changed this. We thought that would change us a lot. We thought that was the big change. We went and looked, and that actually didn't account for it. So we don't quite know what's, understand all of that yet. But that's, I mean, this B tagging.
The second yellow one?
Yeah, I don't think, but again, this is the one where this was the same B tagged events as this, but with the kinematic fit. And I think, again, you use this information that says these events look top-like. And they look more top-like than background, so you get the higher number. So it doesn't affect you as much. Right. And so there is, our B tagging is really far behind. And the D0 is even further behind because they're starting from scratch. But we're just taking the run one algorithms and running them. And I just put down here what the theoretical cross sections are for different top masses so you get an idea. We fall in the right range, but our errors are large, so it can be anywhere from 4 to 8. So in run one, we did do a search for a single top, but of course we were very statistics limited. We had a limit, which was that it had to be in the combined for both T-channel and S-channel. The cross-section should be less than 14 picobarns at the 95% confidence level. Okay, so that's what we did in run one. And now for run two, with two inverse femtobarns, which we should have around 2005 or early 2006, we should hopefully, by theoretical cross-section, see about 100 of these events. And so this is also a good way for us to measure, make a measurement of VTB. So we have one thing I was just going to show quickly, that this is a case where top is a background for the single top. This is actually very difficult. What's plotted here is a bunch of kinematic distributions. In fact, this is just the ET of the leading jet, ET of the second highest jet, and the PT of the first jet, and to show you that the background is what's in green, the red is top, we expect most of the top, and the single top is sandwiched between these two, so it's very hard to pull out, right, when we... And we did in run one just last year, there was a grad student that went back and relooked at the run one data and added, instead of just doing a shape fit to one variable, went and actually did a neural network. So he then combined 7 different variables and was able to then, we were hoping, if you just did a study with pseudo-experiments before looking at the data, we thought we could actually take, decrease our limit from 14 down to 9. So a priori, we thought we should have 9 to 10. When we went and looked, we actually observed an excess of events. So that screwed up our limit. So actually, our limit from this sample was 25. We have now redone this, and as of right now, basically, they're blessing the new numbers. So we have included up to 200 inverse femtobarns, so all the data we've had up to September. We have done 2 combinations now. We've done a combined search for where the S-channel and T-channel are together, and then just the T-channel. This time, we don't see any excesses yet, so we can set better limits. What we do in this case for the combined is we looked at the HT distribution. So again, this is just the sum of all the jet energies, and we can then plot. There's a slight difference. You can see in purple is this T channel, blue is the S channel. They are kind of laying right on top of each other and have a very similar shape, so you cannot distinguish between the two of them in this kind of plot. The non-top background is peaked more to your left, and the top is more to the right, so we're trying to pick out these shapes in the middle. When we do a fit, we actually, these in fact plots I'm showing, since I didn't have time to pull out the new plots, are actually what was blessed back in August, but this number is the new number. So when we redo a fit and you calculate what your limit is, we used to have 17.5, and then as of today it's now a little under 14. So we've finally gotten better than what we had in run one. What's even better right now is just in the T channel. So we want to be able to, when you show that HT, the S and T channel look very similar. One place they don't is when you look in the charge times the pseudo-rapidity of the events. Then you can actually distinguish between the S channel, which is in the red, and the T channel is in the black. Right? And we can actually, since the T channel looks quite different than the TT bar and the background, we can separate that out. So we do a shape fit. In this case, we do this, and we now see a limit of less than 8.5. But we're obviously still way away from 2 picobarns or less, which is the theoretical prediction.
This is the electric charge. What is Q?
It's actually a summed charge of tracks. Okay. Okay, so it, so, can't go without talking about the top mass. And of course, this is what more people are, as Dave was talking about, much more of the idea that top is a background, and what can you do with Higgs, and what can you do for LHC. So most people by now have seen the plot, which is the W mass versus the top mass, right? And if you put on the green is the old run one for D0, the blue is a circle for CDFs. You've now put on LEP2's bounds on the W mass. And you can also include the neutrino data and the LEP1 data with their indirect searches. And you find that you're starting to get yourself confined, as we've all been known for a long time, to the low mass region for Higgs. Now, we project that we can do the top mass in less than 3 GeV with 2 inverse femtobarns. So if you just scale that down, this is the type of size we would expect to have when you use CDF and D0 together. even though because there is this issue with the B tagging and various things, some people have said, are you sure you can still do this? We actually think we can actually do better, do about 5 GeV by this summer. So but of course, the biggest, everybody asked me this, you know, D0 came out with a new run one measurement last fall where their new measurement was 180. And we still had, we had from run one 175, and I had a lot of people at Lesueur saying, well, what is it? Are you at 180? Do you see 180? Because if we shift our top mass, it obviously shifts the Higgs mass by quite a bit, or the possibility of the ranges. So far, the only mass measurement, we've got about 4 analyses running. But the only thing, again, that's happened is we've redone what we did in run one, which is just a complete event-by-event reconstruction. We use the Lepton plus JETS events. If an event, if a JET is tagged as a B, it has to be associated with the B. By using B tags, you can cut down the number of combinations. But this was our best way of doing it in run one, so that's the first thing that we did. So this is just a repeat of that. What was blessed with the first 100 inverse pico barns, we've now come up. We were 175 before. We're now 177.5. Large statistical uncertainty, and I'll show a plot in a minute about what we think is going on there. And again, large systematic. Now, there's a brand new number that's not quite blessed yet, but with this has 22 events in it, so the events are in yellow, and it's kind of a ratty distribution still. In run one, they were all much more bunched around 175, a much narrower distribution, which gave us a much smaller statistical uncertainty. Our statistical uncertainty comes from the half-width, half-max of our fit. So in run one, our statistical uncertainty was more like 3 or 4, which we got exceedingly lucky. When you went and you did a plot of how likely was that to happen when you looked at pseudo-experiments, that wasn't very likely. Well, this is, we got really unlucky. So I'll show you that if you were sitting out here out in the tails, so if you did distribution of pseudo-experiments and you want to plot what you expect your statistical uncertainties to be, this is what you would see. So you expect a statistical uncertainty somewhere around 5.5 or 6 or so. I guess the mean is 8.5, but we're sitting out in the tails. Whereas before in run one, we were sitting down here. So we got, that's what I mean by we got lucky last time, we got unlucky this time. But again, so eventually we hope that will take care of itself when we get more data. The problem is the systematics up here. And we were always systematics limited in the top mass before, but again, this is where almost all of our systematic uncertainty is coming from our misunderstanding of what we're doing with the JETS right now. And so these are the same categories, kinds of systematics we did in run one, with initial state and final state radiation changing your parton distribution functions, if you use different Herwig versus Pythia versus IsoJet, and changing your B tag efficiency, right? So the key is that these numbers have gotten a little bit better on our new result when they come out, because there's 32 events now instead of 22, so these have gone down, but they're still around 10, 9. And the systematics a little bit better, but we expect this to get much better by the summer. And the new number is 178. So we seem to be creeping up. D0 is staying at 180, so maybe the top mass is closer to 180. So of course, most people here also know that, so at CD, at the Tevatron, right, when we look at this, the main modes that we'd want to look at Higgs are through the WH and the ZH, because the BB bar mode just has way too much background for us. So if we were going to do things with the Higgs is really under 135, we would go look for events where we have a lepton neutrino and 2Bs, or 2 neutrinos and 2Bs, so a lot of missing energy in 2Bs, or a dileptron with 2Bs, and it changes slightly if the mass is greater than 135. But this is now kind of, we were requested last year to do we had a Higgs combined working group between CDF and D0. It was mandated from DOE that they wanted to know what our Higgs potential reach was. Turns out this plot was years ago shown in our run two technical design reports. And when we went through all the work and spent 6 months really doing more detailed studies, the curves basically didn't move at all. So if we wanted to do just the 95% confidence level limit of excluding a Higgs, right, this on the side here is how much integrated luminosity we would need, right, versus Higgs mass. So it turns out that, you know, originally we were saying 15 inverse femtobarns. We thought we were, you know, somewhere up here. It was great. We were going to be able to do a 3 sigma discovery. Well, last year with the canceling of the run 2B portion and the accelerator just not working as well, we were looking more at 2. Now, I would say somewhere more likely is 5. We would expect to be somewhere around here. So depending on what the top mass is, we should be able to exclude. If there is no signal, top mass is below 120, or Higgs mass is below 120. but it is true that we would need 5 inverse femtobarns for a three sigma discovery. In the standard model, the MSSM does have, we can do better exclusion ones there, it turns out, but as the name of the game has sort of shifted Higgs to LHC, as everyone knows. To illustrate, though, Dave's idea that top is a background, here's one way of looking for W to Higgs. So I'm using the signature where I have a lepton neutrino for the W and the BB bar from the Higgs. And top is this shape down here in red. So this is looking at the mass, the invariant mass of the BB bar pair. So the and this was taken where we had an input mass of the Higgs of 115. So background swamp you, the Higgs is a little purple part on top. So a lot of improvements are coming along. I think people are a little worried that we're not progressing fast enough. So I showed you basically numbers which are equivalent to what we did in run one. They have more statistics, twice as many statistics. But due to problems with the systematics and the understanding of our detector, we're not at the level that we were at run one. It just takes time. We are improving the SVXB tagging. We have a new, as told Dave, we're going to go through and reprocess all of our data from the beginning of time with a new set of detector simulation and reconstruction code. This code in it has better jet corrections. It has in the improved SVXB tagging, which uses our forward tracking, 3D tracking, and also our beam, the layer 00, which is on the beam pipe. The biggest holdup for a lot of things, too, is our simulation was abysmal. So the biggest thing that's changed in our new round of offline code is that the simulation has gotten much, much better. But basically, we just need to buckle down and spend the time to understand our detector now. So what we have partly done is there is a push from the lab in Fermi News today. A couple weeks ago, there was a plot which showed the number of publications as in terms of year. And so, you know, Babar is kind of at the bottom in steady state, or Slack, and Brookhaven's kind of there. And CDF is way up at the top. And then as of about 2000 or 1998, it drops like a rock. And we basically finished all our run one analyses. We didn't have any run two analyses yet. And we've been under a mandate that we have to do publications. So we had to promise 50 publications for this year. So we have five so far. The five are all in B physics, the B physics group. Yeah, they've all been churning those out. We do expect to basically take the 200 inverse femto barns, or pico barns. Wish it was femto barns. The 200 inverse pico barns, those results that I'm showing, we expect to have, start publishing those kind of results this summer. But they're still not going to have the improved systematic understanding. So, in fact, we've sort of segregated our grad students. We've got the older grad students that want to finish doing all these kind of analyses and the numbers I'm showing. Any new, young, bright, bushy-tailed grad students that haven't been beaten down to death yet are told they have to use this new version of code, which it takes us 6 months or so to validate and understand things. And they're going to be ones that are going to go off and do the grunt work for jet corrections and things. And as that's starting to happen, we'll add more and more new analyses. So, of course, everything you've seen is just things that are a minor difference from what we had in run one. Or exactly run one. So we do see top. That was a wild, there was right at the beginning, a little while, people said, have you refound it? We have, some of our cross sections are coming out a little lower than we would have expected, particularly with the B tagging. The mass is going up. We do right now have as much, twice as much data as we did in run one. So once we understand our systematics better, we do expect to have better numbers. There are some of these new techniques coming up. So I showed a few BLEST numbers with those. We do expect to do about 50 publications totally over CDF. Mike Witherall made us promise. And but the biggest problem is we are just limited by the systematics. And there's just, until we can spend some time. And you know, if you want to learn anything, this model, what we're doing, is the same thing's going to happen at LHC. Right? So they're going to turn on. It's going to take them 2 years to understand their detectors. And they're going to probably end up having to do the same model where there's going to be a push to make them get out whatever they can get out. But it's really, before you can beat down the systematics, it's going to take time. And we just weren't pressed as much in run one. People weren't as interested. So, so that's all I have to say.